Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It may be the age of YouTube and the internet, but in the home stretch of the midterm elections, it is straight-in-your-face traditional media, especially television, that is popping with campaign ads this season. $2 billion spent on political and so-called issue ads in this campaign, a new record, and $400 million more than in the 2004 presidential contest. Those ads are fierce, funny, nasty, ugly. Some go for the angelic soft sell, politicians in church pews or on horseback. More go for the fear and loathing button, ticking bombs, bin Laden in the shadows, red-handed corruption scandal. Up next on Point, in the final hours, a tour of the good, bad, and ugly of campaign ads 2006. We've got a great panel with us this hour. Joining me first from Nashville, Tennessee, is John Geer. He's a political science professor at Vanderbilt University and author of the recent book In Defense of Negativity, Attack Advertising in Presidential Campaigns. John Geer, thanks so much for being with us.
Tom, thank you for having me.
With us from Chicago is Democratic media strategist David Axelrod. He's partner in AKP, Message and Media. He's produced advertisements for Tammy Duckworth's run for the House in Illinois, Deval Patrick's 2006 gubernatorial race in Massachusetts, and also for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He was the media man behind Senator Barack Obama's run for the Senate in the tough 2004 primary in Illinois. David Axelrod, thank you for joining us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, D.C. is Brad Todd, Republican media consultant, partner at On Message, Inc. This year he worked on Republican Michael Steele's ad campaign for the U.S. Senate in Maryland. He's also done advertising for the Republican Governors Association and National Republican Senatorial Committee. Brad Todd, thanks to you for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Okay. We've got a whole lot of ads to listen to, and we want to get your big view as well, but let's just begin to get some of these in our ear. Here's one from the Democratic National Committee, released an ad on the morning of October 25th, anticipating President Bush's press conference on dropping the phrase, stay the course. In this ad, words flash up on the screen, starting with, what is the Bush and GOP plan for Iraq? October is the bloodiest month for U.S. troops in Iraq in 2 years, nearly 3,000 troops killed in Iraq. All that against a sound montage of Bush and officials saying, stay the course.
We will stay the course until the job is done.
It's absolutely essential that we stay the course.
You just got to stay the course.
We're just going to stay the course. And the citizens of Iraq need to know we will stay the course.
The second thing you do is you stay the course.
But we have to stay the course.
And yet we must stay the course because the end result is in our nation's interest.
We will stay the course. We'll stay the course.
We're there to stay the course.
Stay the course.
We're going to stay the course in Iraq.
Stay the course, and then the big words on the screen, Democrats, a new direction for America, and this.
Listen, we've never been stay the course.
It's never been a stay the course strategy.
And there it is, going right straight at stay the course. John Geer, in that ad, we've got that thumping kind of big timpani behind and tape of all those stay the course statements with a little humor at the end where the president seems to shrug and say, oh, what about it? Do you hear the season's themes running in that ad, John?
Well, I think, you know, this is a classic kind of attack ad that's totally, you know, legitimate for the Democrats to run. It's also one that I think is potentially informative, reminding people that this has been a policy of stay the course using, you know, statements by the president and other people tied to the administration and then, you know, raising questions about it. It's one reason why attack ads are important to the country. And this is not a partisan statement, but rather one of valuable information for the public.
Brad Todd, you're a Republican here. Do you hear a fair attack ad there? You know, fair criticism, something else? And what kind of grades do you give that ad?
Well, I think they went a little bit over the top in tone on that ad, but there was another ad, a Stay the Course ad, that ran in Ohio that did not mention any particular candidate that used a little bit more neutral setting and just ran a series of bites of the president saying stay the course that I thought was a lot more effective. The big question, I think, is whether, you know, the Democrats have bet a whole lot on the president alone. And I think that they missed a huge opportunity this year to, with ads like that, to translate that sentiment into something broader. And we'll see tomorrow if that's going to be enough.
David Axelrod, how about it? The very ominous music there and the stay the course recitations from many quarters, Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush and Tony Snow. And then at the end, the president saying, oh, stay the course, I don't know. Is that the humor note that's come in this year, even when the when the big bass drums are booming?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how humorous it is. I think it's kind of searing to make someone confront the inconsistencies in their own statements. And the thing that makes that, I think, an effective piece of advertising is that you're essentially using the president's own words, Mr. Cheney's own words, and the others against them. I think it's very effective. I do think, as to Brad's point, you know, there's been other advertising. I did one for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee that points out that in this midterm election, one of the big questions is whether we have a Congress that's willing to challenge these policies. And I think that's part of what's going to be on the ballot tomorrow. So I think ads like these help contribute to that discussion.
Let's get a feeling from the other side here. Fear has been a big theme this year. And there's been an ad run with a kind of ticking bomb ad, it's been called, from the Republican National Committee, that's harkened all the way back to 1964 and one of Lyndon Johnson's TV ads against Barry Goldwater. Now, the 64 ad is a real classic here, John Gehr, I guess, the Daisy ad. We're going to hear it in just a moment, but remind us of the circumstances in 1964 around this ad that was considered really groundbreaking at that time.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking, and it was actually only aired once and still talked about 40-plus years later. The background was that Barry Goldwater had made a couple of statements in the past prior to his presidential run where he had talked loosely about using nuclear weapons. Not that Barry Goldwater would have done such a thing, but nonetheless had made a couple of statements. And this ad, which actually never mentions Barry Goldwater's name, plays off that fear by raising doubts about Barry Goldwater and the fact that, you know, there was a threat of nuclear war. And, of course, of all the issues back in 64, that was certainly the biggest because, of course, it would have the hugest implications.
Let's listen to some of that. Of course, it starts out with a little girl picking petals off a daisy. This is the 1964 presidential election. This ad was created by Tony Schwartz, Doyle Dane Birnbach. LBJ went on to defeat Barry Goldwater.
The stakes to make a world in which all of God's children can live or to go into the dark. We must either love each other or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Wow, it ran once, and we can hear why we're still hearing about it all this time later, but there is an echo in a Republican National Committee ad that came out for this season, came out on October 22nd, no narration, only the sound of a ticking bomb, and quotes from Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri flashing across the screen behind images of training terrorists. So against that clicking, ticking clock, we get what is yet to come will be even greater. Osama bin Laden, Al Jazeera, December 21st, 2001. With God's permission, we call on everyone who believes in God to comply with his will to kill Americans, quoting bin Laden, and right on through with the same kind of tick, tick, tick. And the images on the screen, Brad Todd, absolutely chilling images of terrorists in training in all kinds of circumstances across the Middle East. Is this hitting that same fear button that we saw hit in the Daisy ad?
I think so. I think that ad was very well done. I wish it had gotten more play in more places. It's really the role of the National Committee to do that sort of advertising, and I think they did a great job with it. I think they, by resisting the urge to use the announcer and go too far and make it a little more conventional, they did great work with it. Tony Schwartz's ad, you know, from the first time you hear it, you can almost recite Lyndon Johnson's words afterward. It was such a powerful ad.
These are the stakes. David Axelrod, fair here on the fear front, or too far in leaning on that button in this GOP ad?
Well, you know, the Goldwater Johnson ad, the Daisy ad, came in the context of an entire campaign in which the Democrats, I think, pretty deftly positioned Goldwater way off to the right, even within his own party, by using his own statements, and it was in the context of a full campaign. You know, this one was sort of an outlier. I think the Republicans would like to focus this election on terrorism, as they have in the past, and make the implication that Democratic Party would leave them weaker. But Iraq has completely overwhelmed that issue, and unlike 2 years ago, they haven't been able to conflate the two. So I don't think, you know, that spot was much more impactful, because I think it was much more in context back in 64.
I'm joined by Republican media consultant Brad Todd in Washington. David Axelrod, Democratic media consultant, joins us from Chicago, and John Gears with us from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's listen to just a little bit of the ad scene from Nebraska. President Bush was there in a very red state on the stump yesterday, campaigning for Republican congressional candidate Adrian Smith in a race that could be tight. Running against Smith in Nebraska's 3rd District is Democratic congressional candidate Scott Klebb. Here, the good-looking young Scott Klebb on horseback in a quite romantic setting, playing off his Nebraska roots.
This is pioneer country. You don't punch cows and not put in a full day's work, and that's what he does.
His word is his bond. That's cattle talk, but that's the way it is. His word is his bond. I like that kind of attitude. I like that kind of foresight.
Promoting ethanol, promoting good schools, good education, Scott definitely is all about the issues of Nebraska.
He can find the answers and try to get solutions back in Washington.
I'm Scott Klebb, and I approve this message.
There we go. No fear or smear here, Brad Todd. It's all a kind of a Hollywood romance there, a high chaparral. What do you hear and see there?
Well, you know, we have a lot. Their fear is a pretty big product in political campaign ads, but hope and optimism is should never be undersold. I think that ad was a great ad. I actually think this has been a great year for man on the street, sort of real person interview ads, real people telling the story. I think it's a year where folks are pretty cynical. And having someone who they can see them, when they can see themselves on screen, they can translate to that person. I think that's been a very effective way to tell a story this year.
And David Axelrod, when you step back and look at the whole season's ads, and we'll hear a lot more of them, how do you see the big themes? Is it this sort of more positive, we can do it, America theme that we just heard there from Nebraska? Or do you see the dominance of the tough, the ugly, the smear? What would you say is new and the edge this
there's
year?
There's no doubt that the preponderance of ads this year have been more negative. And that's, I think, a function of the fact that the country is not very optimistic right now. There's a sense of pessimism about the direction, and there's a great hungering for change, and I think Democratic candidates have taken advantage of it. I think Republican candidates are on the defense and therefore have tried to find ways to demonize Democrats to stave off this, I'm talking about the incumbents, this move for change. And actually this ad that ran, and I agree that I think it was a very, very good ad, was really intended to separate the candidate from the gestalt of Washington. The real message here is I'm not one of them, and therefore I can be trusted to bring real change and represent your true concerns and values. So I think the tenor of the year is negative, because I think the public sentiment is pretty negative right now.
John Geard, would you agree with that assessment? What do you see as characterizing this campaign season's ads?
I agree with David that they have been overwhelmingly negative, and I think it's not only the public mood, as he points out, but you also have two political parties that are more polarized. You have huge stakes because the control of Congress is at risk, and because of the polarization, that means that which party controls matters even more. And I think also this kind of ties into the mood part that David raised, but I don't think either party has a lot to run on nationally. The Republicans certainly don't want to talk about Iraq, and at the same time, the Democrats don't, for example, have a very clear policy about what they do that would be different. So you bring all those together, and you've got a great recipe for attack advertising.
And the country has seen a lot, yeah.
I think that polarization is a big part of it. You know, since 1998, we've been talking on television to a very small group of people. Republicans and Democrat-based voters put on their jerseys very early in the election, and we're talking to a smaller and smaller pool of folks in the middle with our television ads who are almost all very cynical about politics on both sides. And I think that sort of naturally takes, you know, advertising follows the consumers more than it follows the advertisers. We the market works. We take the advertising to the consumers, and those guys in the middle are pretty cynical and pretty jaded about both sides.
You know, let's hear a little bit from Montana here, if we may. There's been a very tight race there between the Republican Conrad Burns and the Democratic challenger John Tester. Here was this interesting back and forth where Burns linked himself to the second senator from Montana, Senator Max Baucus, a Democrat. Now, Burns is running against Democrat John Tester, of course, and at the end of the ad, Burns concludes that Tester is too liberal for Montana.
I'm Conrad Burns, and I approve this message.
How liberal is John Tester? Senators Baucus and Burns voted to cut taxes, but Tester called tax cuts ridiculous and would raise taxes $2,000 per family. Baucus and Burns passed drug coverage for seniors, voted to make us less dependent on foreign oil, and end the death tax. But John Tester opposes Senators Baucus and Burns on all these issues that matter to Montana's future. That means John Tester is too liberal for Montana.
Baucus and Burns, they're the Republican incumbent trying to piggyback, lash himself to the Democrat in his state to hold off a Democratic challenger. In response to Montana Republican Senator Burns' advertisement, Democratic challenger John Tester released this ad with Democratic Senator Max Baucus.
You might have heard those ads from Conrad Burns using my name. Well, let me be clear. I support John Tester. Fact is, Senator Burns and I disagree on a lot of things. For example, he supports a national sales tax on everything Montana's buying. Boy, I sure don't. And you can bet that John Tester and I will stop any national sales tax, and we'll push for more tax cuts to help Montana's families. I'm certainly going to vote for John Tester, and I hope you do too.
I'm John Tester, and I approve this message.
And the banjo picks on. Brad Todd, what a story there. You've got the Republican incumbent lashing himself to his Democratic sitting senator, to try and hold off the challenger. That looks like a novel approach.
Well, it invited a good bit of risk. You know, a compelling referee always makes the best response ad. And I think the Baucus ad that Tester's campaign came back there with is pretty compelling way to do it. You know, certainly bipartisanship and independence is in vogue among Republican campaigns this year, but I thought the Baucus comeback there was pretty good.
Because risky, because you know Baucus is perfectly free to come back and say,
absolutely,
get off of my bandwagon.
That's
here.
Right, and will.
David Axelrod, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that's absolutely true, and that must have been part of their calculation. They must have known that was a possibility, but I think it was particularly effective. You know, Brad said something earlier about this is a year in which authenticity is valued, and I think that's true. There's such cynicism out there that when a respected person comes on television and rebuts a negative ad that's delivered by an announcer, I think that's very, very effective. So I'm not sure that the Burns people won in that exchange.
$2 billion plus spent on ads in this season. Let's hear what our listeners think of what they're seeing and hearing. Let me take a call from Madison, Wisconsin. Daryl's on the line. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I'm actually from Bloomington. But anyway, novel approaches and tricky cliches is not what the ad should be about. This more or less allows the propaganda to control the issues. What we really need are factual type ads where we generate some constructive and comprehensive thinking on the part of the voter. Now, you talk about big spending and taxes and all this stuff, big government, small government. Mm. It's not just how much we are taxed, it's how the tax is used. If it's used to kill millions of people in foreign wars and so forth, how does that help America?
Daryl, how do you get that in a 30-second ad or a minute, which is all anybody can afford?
I'll guarantee you I can get all this stuff in a 30-second ad. I majored in broadcasting, and I'd like to be producing ads that would help America and not just trick America and propagandize America, and that's basically what your advertising is doing. A lot of people are so naive, they really have never thought in depth about what is really happening in the world today as far as the decisions that our policymakers make.
But those ads are going to be out there trying to push their buttons anyway. Brad Todd, David Axelrod, here's a would-be ad producer saying you guys could do it a lot better. You could inform, not just hit the buzz button here. What do you say, Brad?
Well, you persuade with emotion. And I never expect that viewers are going to get all their information from advertising. You hope that advertising sparks an interest and it causes them to look a little further in formats where they can learn a lot more. And today, a lot of times we pair our advertising with efforts on the internet that are a little longer format, that are a little more detailed. In that we started doing that with positive advertising a couple of cycles ago. Now you see it a whole lot more in contrast advertising, where you see an entire website where you can see all the backup behind it. I think in the internet age, the quotient for how much information you have to get in front of the public is really, really a lot higher. And I think that, just like any product advertiser, when Ford advertises trucks, they don't spend the entire commercial talking about the height and width and length of the truck. They tell you it's Ford Tough. Campaign advertising is no different. We hope to pique your interest.
John Gear, our caller, wants less hype and more information in the ads that he gets, more education. Is there room for that, or is that – he says he can do it in 30 seconds. Can that be done, or is it at odds with the format?
Well, I'm not sure that everybody wants more information, and you can learn certainly a lot in 30 seconds. Ironically, he probably actually doesn't know it, but he favors negative ads over positive ads because they do tend to have more facts and documentation in them. But I think the bottom line is that the premise behind that question is something that I wouldn't agree with. That is, I think the American public is able to make pretty good decisions. They've certainly done so 200 plus years, given that we've survived that long as a nation. And they can work through this. They can see manipulation. And so I have much more faith in the public as a whole, particularly individual voters you may have questions about. But the electorate makes pretty wise choices. And these ads, if they're selling something that's totally disreputable, will backfire.
Let's listen to an ad from Pennsylvania, this one from Republican incumbent Senator Rick Santorum there. He's up against Democratic challenger Bob Casey. And you'll hear him talking as a series of really searing images come across the background. Here, a North Korean flag and a missile shooting into the sky. And then against that flag, the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, and Rick Santorum's Democratic challenger, Bob Casey's face. Then an image of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the head of Iran. Again, the Iranian flag, the Iranian leader's face, and Bob Casey's face. Pictures of terrorists, pictures of Chinese flags, all with his opponent superimposed. Let's listen.
I'm Rick Santorum, and I approve this message.
North Korea, close to a nuclear missile to reach America. Yet Casey opposes deploying a missile defense system now. Iran, also close. Yet Casey opposes creating the bunker-busting bombs that may be needed to stop them. China, drilling oil just 50 miles off our coast. Yet Casey opposes us doing the same, putting our energy at risk. Terrorists trying to enter our country. Yet Casey comes out for amnesty for illegals. We just can't take a chance on Bob Casey.
Rick Santorum campaigning against Democratic challenger Bob Casey. David Axelrod, here's the timpani drum put to work for fear. There's a lot of information here, but also a lot of emotion in these juxtapositions of his challenger with challengers to the country. Fair game?
Well, I think this is kind of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre spot you run when you're in deep trouble. And Senator Santorum is in deep trouble. I agree with Professor Gear. I think people are pretty discerning about these things. This may pique their curiosity, but I don't think it's so over the top. It's unpersuasive. People know Bob Casey in that state. The Casey name's been there for a long time. They're known as conservative Democrats. I think he's fighting a losing battle there, but it's all that's left to him because he's trailing by quite a bit.
Let's turn to a call from Providence, Rhode Island. Kurt, hi. Kurt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What about a push to limit spending allowed on TV advertising? It seems like such a huge waste of money. It would also help to limit the necessity of politicians to raise such huge sums and fall prey to influence by large donors. It just seems like way over the top $2 billion on TV advertising.
That is an awful lot of money, but what if it were capped, do you think the electorate would end up less well-informed, Kurt, or not?
I think they may be, politicians may be more prone to run ads touting their position and less prone to waste the limited funds on negative attack ads.
John Geer, how about it? Put a cap on spending on ads, and then people may use it more sensibly, and also you don't have as much fundraising going on, which has its own pitfalls.
Well, I mean, there's certainly people who make the case for public funding where both candidates are kind of – both sides are spared from having to raise money, and there's certainly reasons to go for such a proposal.
But do you think the public's going to spend $2 billion on ads like these?
Well, I don't – you see, I'm not worried about that $2 billion being spent on advertising. It's a chance to inform the public. Sure, it's a lot of money, but if you think about the amount of money we spend on other kind of product advertising – this is not a big deal. This is pretty important stuff, and I think that it's totally relevant. I mean, there's an irony about the way the money's spent because there's huge amounts of money this last weekend that's being spent that's really chasing after a small number of undecided voters and maybe trying to turn out the base. But politics isn't like a normal marketplace. If you win a plurality, you win everything, whereas in normal business, you could lose a little bit of market share and still do pretty well.
David Axelrod, how about it? The more the merrier when it comes to political ads? Is there a point at which they become self-defeating, they turn voters off in general, or can that sometimes be part of the strategy?
I don't know if they become self-defeating. I think they can if they're over the top. If people resent the ad, they can be. I don't think the volume loses you votes. They may begin to tune out. But I think the caller's point, the real problem with the $2 billion isn't that we have too many ads or too many negative ads. The real problem with it is that the things that people have to do to raise that money, but we can't attack that by limiting speech. I think we have to attack that by reducing the cost, perhaps making broadcast available to candidates for free, a certain amount of broadcast time, so that we wouldn't have to raise these huge sums of money to campaign. But, people get a lot of information from television. That is the principal means of communication in our society. So when you say we're going to limit the amount of advertising, you're really saying we're going to limit the amount of free speech in our campaigns. I'm not sure that's a healthy thing.
John Geer is with us from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. David Axelrod, Democratic media consultant, joins us from Chicago. And Brad Todd, a Republican media consultant, joining us from Washington, D.C. We've got a lot of ads to hear. Here's one produced by MoveOn.org. They've done a lot of these issue ads supporting Democratic candidates. They produced a series of ads known as Caught Red-Handed. In this one, MoveOn.org accuses Virginia Congressman Republican Thelma Drake of taking money from energy companies.
Congresswoman Thelma Drake. She accepted more than $30,000 from energy companies, and she voted against bills that would have penalized those companies for price gouging. Instead of protecting us, Congresswoman Drake has been caught red-handed, protecting oil company profits while we pay more at the pump. Tom DeLay, Dick Cheney, Jack Abramoff, and now Thelma Drake, another Republican caught red-handed. MoveOn.org political action is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
There it is, red-handed. And the thing you can't see is that every time Thelma Drake comes on, her hand in this black and white television ad turns red. Red-handed is the MoveOn.org charge. John Geer, fair. Red-handed comes with the kind of implication of law-breaking, or does it?
Well, these 527 ads are often really push the limits and sometimes cross the limits because they're not, accountable on election day. And so these ads are part of a political process, and we believe in free speech, and so we have to support them. But, each individual ad often goes too far, but I hope that, both sides are airing them, and so you hope that it kind of cancels each other out. And I'm not a big fan of these ads, but at the same time, being a supporter of the First Amendment, you just have to live with them.
David Axelrod, of course, MoveOn.org has said, look, these people were playing footsie with big money. They were taking money red-handed. That's just the right word for it, and we made it visual.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think it makes a valid point, which is that, big oil is a major campaign contributor, and there are folks who take a lot of money from them and have given them great benefits. In Congress, there's no doubt that there's hyperbole to it. I mean, throwing in Cheney and DeLay and so on gives it a more flavoring, and perhaps pushes it more toward that the limits. But in terms of getting the general point, I think it's a fair point, and it should be part of the debate.
Let's take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First of all, let me just say I disagree about the awareness of the American public, and also I'd like to say I don't find anything funny in political ads. I really believe that the template or prototype goes back to, and forgive me if I'm paraphrasing, H.L. Mencken saying, never underestimate the stupidity of the American bourgeoisie. And it goes back to Joseph Goebbels, by if you say a lie loud enough and long enough, it'll become the truth. And I have examples of political ads that I've seen in the last 8 years or so that have nauseated me so much that it has made me, unfortunately, so cynical about the American political process, and especially about the manipulation of what may very well be a fact into things that are horrible.
Michael, let me ask you, you've got a very tight and important race there in Tennessee for the U.S. Senate between Harold Ford, the Democratic challenger, Harold Ford Jr., and of course, Bob Corker. I guess they're both going for it, the former Chattanooga mayor. There's been a lot of controversy about the ads in this campaign. Harold Ford's presenting him, you know, standing in the church as quite an angelic candidate, and then Bob Corker coming after him with the Harold Call Me sexual innuendo ad, and now maybe Corker's pulled ahead in the polls. Do you think ads made that difference or part of it there in Tennessee?
Well, I think that they may actually have, in combination with don't underestimate the impact and the lack of knowledge of the voting public. It's emotion-driven, and if an emotion is driven on a lie, I'd just like to interject one more thing about that. There were ads a few years back that took a triple amputee war hero and morphed him and turned him into someone who would sell out this country by aiding terrorists.
You're talking Max Cleland.
I can't think of anything more despicable in my life as to what they did to, I think it was Max Cleland.
That's right.
And there's ads currently being broadcast specifically in Nashville where good old country folk are saying, this person, and I won't use the name, I'm sure the gentleman from Vanderbilt knows who I'm speaking of, she took the Fifth Amendment. I thought only criminals do that. This is in our Bill of Rights and the amendment to the Constitution of what everyone is entitled to. And by mentioning that repeatedly, people get the understanding and say to themselves, oh, well, if you take the Fifth Amendment, then you're just a criminal automatically.
Michael, we've got it.
It infuriates me.
We hear it. Let us go to John Gehr in Nashville. What about your Tennessee ads this year, Professor Gehr, and in the Ford Corker race in particular? What do you make of that in the end?
Well, there has been certainly a nasty campaign here. Both sides have aired lots of ads. I think that the race is still very close. I mean, there's some polls just released today that suggest it's still within the margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
Turnout will probably play a big role. I do think that regardless of who wins this particular battle, that the famous Call Me ad will go down as one of the more famous ones of all time. And I personally am on record saying that that ad, the very last segment of it when the blonde winks at the camera and says, Harold, call me, I think that was, in fact, playing a race card. And it created a huge furor, and I'm not sure that it didn't backfire on Corker a little bit. It took him off his message. But this is such a close race that we could pull out any number of instances and try to blow them up into the causal mechanism that's going to drive the outcome of this election. It has really been fascinating to watch it all. And I get back to the earlier point that I have faith in the citizens of Tennessee and across this country of being able to make, you know, pretty good decisions. And for a country that survived as long as we have, it's amazing to make the case that the public must just be idiots, because we've not only done well but prospered on lots of fronts. So I do have faith.
David?
Tom, I'd just like to add to that. The caller's supposition is that somehow our politics has gotten worse and more negative. And that, of course, isn't true. Some of the most negative campaigns, that we've ever seen happened in the 19th century. And, you know, back in 1824, the John Quincy Adams campaign distributed pamphlets all over the country called The Youthful Indiscretions of General Andrew Jackson from Ages 13 to 64.
Right. That's a long time.
Things that were said about Thomas Jefferson you couldn't even put on TV today during his presidential campaign. So the fact is, television is a big megaphone, and so there's this sense that things are more negative. They're not, and as the professor said, we have survived that, and I do think people are. I think the caller sells people short. I think people do make these distinctions. We're involved in a governor's race in Massachusetts, as you've mentioned. Mm. There have been some terribly negative ads run against Deval Patrick, who's my client. One of which involved a woman walking through a dark garage while they played a partial quote of Patrick talking what seemed to be a favorable way about a convicted rapist.
So playing on a fear of rape here. Mm-hmm.
And that ad, I think, probably sealed the fate, we'll find out tomorrow, of the Republican candidate. I think the public revulsion over that ad was so strong and so great that it was a killer, not for the intended target, but for the person who ran the ad. So I think the American people deserve a little more credit than the caller was giving them.
Brad Todd, let me put it to you, though. I mean, yes, we've always had negative campaigning, even when it was word of mouth or a book put out on Andrew Jackson, let's say. But now television can bring it, you know, instantly before people, a quick turnaround, a quick pop, and off it goes. It is in a media-saturated age. Isn't the impact of this kind of marketing, advertising, isn't it different?
Well, I think we hear a lot of self-righteous indignation over negative ads when it applies to politics, but you know, you never see that on product advertising. And you know, I always think the longest running negative campaign I know of was Wendy's against McDonald's, saying parts is parts, you know, accusing McDonald's of basically, you know, putting chicken entrails into their McNuggets. And you know, you see that a lot if it's Advil and Tylenol or Pepsi and Coke. You know, it's a for some reason, it's a little more fashionable to criticize that in political campaigns. I actually think that the public is pretty discerning, and if you go into a campaign thinking we're going to trick the public, you're going down the wrong road. The public is just like David said earlier. I think that your advertising has to ring true, and it has to be true about your candidate and true about your opponent. And in the end, especially over a long campaign, they can spot a fake.
Well, it gets cranked up pretty high here. Let's listen to an ad. This is Republican congressional candidate Vernon Robinson of the 13th District in North Carolina, considered a long shot against incumbent Democrat Brad Miller. And here we've got an ad. Well, you'll hear what he says, but the thing is the sort of Twilight Zone music and the images behind it, beheadings, two men kissing, two grooms on top of a wedding cake, lesbians, one of whom is holding a sign saying God is a dyke, and flags burning, the most incendiary kinds of images on the social values front that you can imagine. Let's listen. Here's Vernon Robinson calling for a return to good old American values.
If you're a conservative Republican, watching the news these days can make you feel as though you are in the Twilight Zone. Americans are under attack from Islamic extremists in every corner of the world. Homosexuals are mocking holy matrimony, and the lesbians and feminists are attacking everything sacred. Liberal judges have completely rewritten the Constitution. You can burn the American flag and kill a million babies a year, but you can't post the Ten Commandments or say God in public.
One nation under...
7 out of every 10 black children are born out of wedlock, and Jackson and Sharpton claim the answer is racial quotas. And the aliens are here, but they didn't come in a spaceship. They came across our unguarded Mexican border by the millions.
I'm Vernon Robinson. If you send me to Congress, I'll send that back to the Twilight Zone. I approve of this message and of traditional American values.
Holy moly. Now, I'm not sure what is what here. I mean, we've got a kind of a very camp, humorous notion. And on the other side, you can burn the American flag and kill a million babies a year. Brad Todd, what's intended here? What do you think the producer of this ad is intending with this combination of campy, kind of over-the-top humor and the most incendiary images and language?
Well, no question. That's a long-shot campaign that's trying to lob as big
wow.
Big a bunch of TNT as they can to get your attention. And, you know, that campaign ads, the ads from that campaign have probably been emailed around on YouTube more than any campaign with a comparable budget in the country. And Oh, there's a load there. I don't really know what to say about that.
I'd say this. I don't think Vernon's going to win the election, but he probably will fetch himself some sort of letter from the lawyers for the people who produced The Twilight Zone and leave it to Beaver.
Right. No question.
He may indeed. I want to hear ads from each of our two media consultants here. First one, Brad, that you helped make for Michael Steele, running against incumbent Democratic Senator Benjamin Cardin in Maryland, the Republican Michael Steele. On Message, Inc. produced his TV ads. And here we've got Steele standing by a bank of TVs, the background sky blue, very few visuals. It's been compared to a Target ad. Let's listen.
Hey, me again, Michael Steele. Soon your TV will be jammed with negative ads from the Washington crowd. Grainy pictures and spooky music saying Steele hates puppies. And worse, for the record, I love puppies. And I think you deserve better. Some real ideas for change, like a ban on all gifts from lobbyists to congressmen, and no last-minute amendments for pork barrel spending. That's a start, because Washington can't fix our problems until we fix theirs. I'm Michael Steele, and this is my message.
Okay, Brad, there's your work, and it's all upbeat. Sounds like a Gap ad or a Target ad, people have said. What were you going for here?
Well, Michael Steele is a fantastic candidate who has a real keen grasp of what he wants to communicate and what his message is, and he knows who he is. And I think one thing that, you know, we're in a pretty tight race in Maryland right now, dead heat by all accounts, in what is a pretty blue state in a blue year. And I think one reason is that Michael Steele very early on recognized that while there is some unrest among the public with the president, it's not just limited to him. It's about all of the Washington establishment. And Ben Cardin, our opponent, has been a part of it for 20 years, had been a part of the political establishment in Maryland for 40 years. And there is a pretty fair amount of dissatisfaction with the Democrat establishment as well. And the fact that we're close in that race, I think, is an endorsement of that.
But all upbeat, kind of a Target ad sound to it. On the other side, there's a lot of serious business out there and serious concerns on voters' minds. David Axelrod, you've produced for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee a lot of advertisements on the Iraq War. Here's one we're going to listen to with pictures of soldiers and battle and fire, a soldier hanging his head, black and white picture of Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Bush, finally a picture of the Capitol building. Let's listen.
With 2,800 Americans already dead and 20,000 injured, with the nation's intelligence agency saying our occupation in Iraq has worsened the terrorist threat, with a White House in denial, while top generals warn that Iraq may be sliding into a full-scale civil war, tell Congress it's long past time to put down their rubber stamp and ask the hard questions about Iraq. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
No bebop theme there, David Axelrod, sort of getting really down and heavy on a very tough subject. Is that getting a lot of pickup? Has it had?
Well, I think it has. My sense is, looking at the YouTube, it's gotten a lot of currency and play. I think this is an issue that's paramount on people's minds, and I do think that they feel that Congress has let them down, and in terms of not providing any accountability, not demanding any accountability from the White House. So let me just say, though, Tom, I'd be remiss if I did. I think Brad's ads for Steele have been among the best in the country, and part of the reason is that they are not like other political ads. He doesn't use the same language that you're accustomed to in political ads. He presents himself in a much different kind of way, and I think it cuts through, and there is a sense of authenticity. At the end of the day, I think his problem is he's tied to the majority party in a time when people are not interested in pursuing the same policies. But his ads, I think, have been quite brilliant, and I think that's one of the reasons they're in a very close race there.
Well, in a little more than a day, we'll know what the impact of all this has been. John Geer, do you see a change in the few seconds we've got here, a change afoot or coming in the way ads are done? We're going to have more of the upbeat Brad Todd approach or back to negative?
Oh, I don't think there's going to be any trend per se. I do think that the Todd ads and the ads, for instance, Harold Ford's running, if you have a good candidate, which Steele and Ford are, you can actually put good ads. You can't create good ads when you don't have good candidates.
Well, $2 billion plus, but it all comes down to the voters tomorrow. I want to thank each of you for being with us. John Geer at Vanderbilt, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
David Axelrod at AKP Message and Media in Chicago. David, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And Brad Todd at On Message, Inc. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Enjoy it, Tom. Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new MDX with available real-time traffic monitoring. More information at Acura.com.